Good morning, everyone, and welcome to, well, good morning, good it's good afternoon, actually, and welcome to the Reliable Bud Kitchen. I'm Chef Patrick Mosier. I'm sitting here with Nico Murillo, and we're in an undisclosed location here in the Dallas Metroplex area.
Underground.
Okay, well, we're actually near Fort Worth. That's no big secret. But, you know, this is a red state at this point, and not politically. We mean a red state as far as the cannabis industry goes. But Nico, you have such a unique background in this industry. Being a long-term chef and doing some real great R&D work with that, and then transitioning to the cannabis industry. You know, we've talked about so many subjects in depth. Let's start with your history as a chef. How did you get into the food industry?
Yeah, so I've been in the food industry now for about 20 years. I was a pastry chef for the first 8 years of my career after culinary school. And
where'd you go to culinary school?
Art Institute here in the Metroplex.
Hey, I went to the one in Denver, which I just heard they closed, actually. They closed the culinary school up there.
Well, you know, it's all right. You know, culinary is a hard field and very competitive. So
it is. And there are a lot of schools out there.
A lot of schools out there. A lot of good schools. But, you know, I got the basics, and I went on to become a pastry chef for many years. Thought that's what I was going to be. But at that time, there was no pastry industry here in the Metroplex, so I decided I needed to cook savory, and that's what I did for a while. And private chefing, catering, I did it. And then,
what'd you think of being? So, as a private chef, were you like a personal chef or a private chef? We were locked into one family.
I was locked into one family.
Oh, I did that for a while. What'd you think?
I loved it. I worked for the same family for about 5 or 6 years, and I also worked for PepsiCo at that time as a product development chef, but. With the family, you know, they had several homes, so it was just a very kind of glamorous lifestyle as a chef. You would jump on their jet and fly to this home or that home, and, you know, and it was great, and you got to enjoy the great food that you were cooking for them and see some great places. So
I really liked the fact that you had no food cost.
Yeah, no.
And but I felt like their beck and call boy.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Absolutely. I did. But more than that, it's just you're really locked into a certain style of cooking. Whatever the family likes, you're locked into that. So it really limits you on what your own cooking style is and what your own, you know, wants are out of your cooking, you know, your cooking style. So
I had a wonderful family I worked for, but I had to make 4 separate meals for dinner. So I had one meal for the parents, which was a 3-course meal, either soup or, you know, appetizer, the plated entree, and then dessert. Then the children, they had 3 children in the home. I had to make a separate meal for them, and then a separate one for the nanny, and then one for the wife's mother who lived with them.
Yeah.
It was fascinating. That it was good for me because it was like restaurant service where you're putting up multiple courses for different guests at the same time.
I mean, that's a hard job. My job wasn't quite that hard. Oh, I cooked for a large family, but it was just dinner, you know. So I would go in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would be out of there by 7.
I was supposed to do lunch and dinner, but they were never there for lunch.
Yeah.
But it took
that's
all day
hard.
To prep for dinner.
For sure, yeah. You know, that was a great job for me. It really set the stage for my skill set to be able to go into R&D, you know, the amount of time management and organization that you need and self-management that you need in working for a private company is paramount in working in R&D, because that is all about time management. And the R&D process is such a long, meticulous process that, you know, I was really blessed and lucky to have that pastry education, because that really set me up, along with the catering, of being self-managing, to be able to do product development, because it is a long process. And there's so many other steps that people don't think about whenever you're thinking about product development that are paramount as you're really thinking about smart, well-thought products.
Well, and you're not because it's not just overnight that you develop that gold standard recipe.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, you have to worry about the logistics of sourcing product.
Yeah,
You find once you kind of develop a rough, you know, outline for the recipe, then you have to worry about supply chain.
Absolutely,
know,
yeah.
Logistics.
After I had left PepsiCo, I'd spent 10 years there as a product development chef. I left there and worked for Dickey's Barbecue here in Texas, which was a great barbecue chain, Texas owned, and learned how to barbecue some great meats. But I was their R&D chef, and it really opened my eyes to the distribution chain and the complexities of keeping product in rotation fresh. And so, you know, I think that as I'm looking at that skill set and as I was seeing the cannabis industry gain momentum, I knew that there was a huge need for people like myself that understood those complexities to come into the play. So that's why I entered it. Obviously now it's been 3 years since then, and my goals have changed and my desires have changed. So it's definitely about the patients now. But I do think that you and I spoke earlier a little bit on this, but I do think that it's important for developers really to start thinking of smart products.
Well, you know, so I'm going to say barbecue for all our listeners out there. Barbecue, you know, in case you just lit one up and you're getting hungry now. Texas barbecue, not
Texas
just any barbecue.
Texas barbecue.
Chopped beef sandwich. And actually, one of the reasons I thought about that are, you know, we did talk about unique products and a need for a change in direction in the commercial edibles market. And one of the products I saw that actually won a few awards, in 2016, was a barbecue sauce. And although that's kind of a little outside the realm of what we spoke about, taking the sugar out of products and things like that, mm-hmm. we'll get into a little more depth in more depth in a moment. I thought it was unique that the market was finally starting to go at a commercial level to the savory side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, plant cannabis and plant botanicals are paired really nicely with savory products. You mm-hmm. know, even something as simple as a demi-glace, you know, that can go on top of a steak or a sauce, you know, is something that really complements grilled meats and savory umami notes.
Compound butters, things
absolutely,
like that.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah. And those are things that you can put very easily on top of your food items, and you're not cooking that. So with the barbecue sauce, yes, it tastes great, and it's doing the job. But you're applying that to a product that has a post cook, and you're destroying some of those cannabinoids. So just for myself, I really focus on minimally processed and preserving the terpenes and the cannabinoids as much as possible through low temperature cooking. And just like barbecue, low and slow.
Yep, low and slow.
Low and slow, that's what I like to think of. But
barbecue, I'm just going to throw
barbecue.
That out there, sorry.
Yes, so, you know, I do think it's important that that developers are mindful of, you know, what the end product's going to be and the application's going to be. And
So you were one of the first, part of one of the first teams here in Texas to start the application process, right?
Yes.
Were you going for a fully integrated solution?
Fully integrated, yeah. That's what the regulation requires here in Texas.
Okay, so you had to be seed to sale.
Yep, seed to sale.
Okay. So that would have been grow house plus production and then dispensary? Or
exactly.
Or did they even allow, was there even a production license?
No, it's all three licenses. Mm-hmm. It's growing, processing and dispensing, and then also laboratory testing is internal now. So,
oh, is it internal now?
Yes, I believe that was changed at the very end.
So I think internal. that's actually good, because having to go to an external source all the time to test your product, A, it's a time delay,
yeah,
and B, it's an additional cost that if you can simply purchase the
it is. But to be honest, Patrick, I coming from big company, there's a level of standards that is universal among all food manufacturing and any consumer packaged good company. Even in something as simple as a restaurant, you get mm-hmm. inspected and you're held to standards.
Absolutely.
And so I really feel that, you know, testing needs to be done by a third
independent
party.
Parties.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some great labs here that do analytical testing, not on cannabis yet, but on food products.
Well, and there's some nationwide stuff like ProVerde. They have a 24 to 48 hour turnaround. It's not like it's really put that's a good point. Because, you know, most food manufacturing, they have a USDA inspector on site, or at least whenever you're in production, in production.
Yeah. One of the great lab partners that I've been working with here in DFW, AFL Labs, they are preparing themselves to be able to test for cannabis here. And Becky Fundheller, the owner of that lab, she, a woman-owned business, great asset in the food industry. She tests for all the microbials of food. So where I really started in the cannabis space, really because we are in a red state and I don't have availability to my true product, using my product development skills as the basis of developing some smart products, you can really develop a gold standard recipe without the cannabis.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And make that recipe solid. You can go through the mm-hmm. microbial testing. You can go through shelf life
studies. Yeah, because the cannabis, whether you're using a distillate or the raw product, is not going to make a difference in the shelf life, the bacterial growth count, et cetera. Yeah.
Exactly. So you can go ahead and do some forward development and creating those strong, solid gold standards, and then having the testing done, having the microbials, having the shelf life studies done, so when the market does open up, you have some smart products that aren't going to be rotting on shelves once you get them into distribution chains.
So we're talking about products. You shared a tincture with me The first time we went, we had a little conversation. I kind of told you what I was doing. Yeah. And before we get back into the technical side of stuff, mm-hmm. because that's really what fascinates me, is your ability to pay attention to the details, still have fun in the industry, and create these incredible products, mm-hmm. And get the big picture. So for the home recreational user or medicinal user, what are some low-hanging fruit? What are a few things that they can do at home that are fairly easy to do, like the tincture? Yeah. I know that you use an alcohol base for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a simple soaking process. I mean, so walk me through if you can. Well, if you're in a green state, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, if you're in a green state, you can handle, cannabis oil just like any other botanical mm-hmm. oil, because a botanical oil by nature is extracted the same way. Now you have the different methods that they're using in the industry today of alcohol and CO2 or mm-hmm. BHO, and everybody has their own opinion on which they like. As a chef and as a foodie, I of course prefer the most organic process, which would be alcohol.
Yep.
Minimally processed, and so as long as you're handling it right, you would you're going to have a beautiful end product. So, a botanical extraction, very easy stuff to find online. You can do it with lavender. You can do it with roses. You can do mm-hmm. it with any type of flower out there. It's going to go through a heat process, a decarboxylation process. Most people are happy to sit at about 240 degrees Fahrenheit. An hour.
For your lavender.
Yeah, for my lavender. Smells so good in the house. Natural antimicrobial. So, you're going to cook that lavender up about 240 is a good temperature. I like to, put some pizza stones in my oven so that oven is really consistent and steady. And
holds the heat.
Mm-hmm. Holds
regardless
the heat
if
well.
It's firing in the back where the, yeah, behind the firewall or not.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And most of us have these little rinky-dink, commercial ovens. So
non-commercial ovens. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so, but I also like to put a thermometer in there, make sure you don't get temperature peaks in there, and monitor that oven. Heat it up an hour before you start, mm-hmm. make sure it's solid.
So preheat. So this is something I talked about on the air on a different cooking show, just mm-hmm. a conventional cooking show that I talk every week. And one of the big things, one of the biggest mistakes people make in their kitchen, in their home kitchen, is not preheating the oven.
Yeah.
Because it really makes a big difference, because your oven actually overheats to begin, and that thermometer takes a while to heat up. So you're generating all this massive heat behind the behind the walls of the oven. Even though the center may not be hot, the perimeter is really hot, and then again it cools down, and then when it gets to that temperature, it kind of levels out. But putting your product directly in before you preheat the oven, whether you're talking about flour or any type of cooking, you're not going to get the same result as if you wait until the oven is actually preheated to the correct temperature.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a lot of times the outside will overcook and the inside with the interior won't cook.
Yep.
And you're not going to get the right amount of time for decarb.
Yeah,
right, basically.
Absolutely.
So is there a ratio now once you start the extraction process?
Depending on what, your extraction mm-hmm. process is. I mean, there's several ways to extract. The alcohol is one way. You can also do it with vegetable glycerin or MCT oil, which is fractionated coconut oil.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all really good carriers. So, but if you're going to do it with, the alcohol, you would just then, after it's decarboxylized in an hour, I usually cover that, cook mm-hmm. it for an hour, take it out, let it cool completely. Do you
grind it up or break it up?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, you grind it up.
No.
Actually, you do it before you decarb.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Then you blend it and you let it.
Give it the prescribed amount of time. And
yeah, some people, it's all subjective. Some people say more. Some people say less. Some people say you don't need much. So mm-hmm. it's really how you feel, Plant medicine is so personal,
And it, to be honest with you, it's worth the first time that you make it to send some off to be tested. And there are some private discrete testing. Even now they have some facilities that will test for recreational users, not just medicinal.
Yeah.
So it's good to have. I know in California, actually I know in Massachusetts, there are a few places that test even if you don't have a medical card.
Yeah.
So you can send it off to be tested and it'll come back and give you the strength. And, you know, because we all want to know exactly what we're consuming, or at least you should want to know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's why it's important for, you know, people like myself and other people in Texas activists to continue our process here because, you know, we need access to this medicine,
absolutely.
You know.
Well, you know, so on that point, you know, we talk about the portion control. Yeah. I happen to have a friend that went to, I was in Colorado. And there's a great company up there, and I have this product that's from Incredibles, and they're fruit chews. They have lemon, green apple, and cherry.
Yummy.
And, well, I don't live at altitude, so I got back down to the heat here. Oh, no, I mean, this is an empty case now, I'm just saying. So, but I got back down to the heat here, and what
that
I ended up with...
Packaging.
That childproof
packaging,
apparently, it's a Patrick, it's a chef proof.
Yeah.
Well, all right, so anyway, what I ended up with is one big tricolored gummy melted to one side...
Yeah.
Of the case, right? So I have one big gummy, which should be 10 pieces, right? Should be 10 portions, 100 milligrams, 10 milligrams each. What I actually have is one 2-inch by 2-inch square of 100 milligrams. So now I have to kind of reportion that.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot. And we spoke about a solution to that is, or not just a solution, it's actually something that we think is... It is a challenge to the industry, right?
Yeah,
to the producers.
Challenge to the industry.
Not just refine the product that's currently on the market and come up with a better portioning solution, but to kind of change the direction of what we're doing in general, to some extent at least, or give a wider variety of products for many reasons, one of which is being that for medicinal purposes, we're often treating people with, say, diabetes. Or someone with
ADHD.
Other ADHD, gut
issues.
Exactly. And so why is that important?
Because it has the sugar and the artificial colorings and the preservatives. And
artificial flavors.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So what's a solution for that? How do we go forward?
You know, I think that it's challenging yourself as a developer. Absolutely. Looking at some of those spectrum disorders and looking at the foods that they need and really saying, how can I develop a product that's smart and that supports their illness. And so, you know, for myself, that's what I've done. You know, I develop products that are, you know, gluten-free, free of preservatives, free of colorings. I don't like artificial, you know, flavorings or colorings. And even the word natural flavorings to me is is a little...
I'm shaking my head over here. I know you can't hear my
brain
rattle, but I'm shaking my head
natural. I mean, coming from the product development world, I know what natural flavorings are, and I know how hard a lot of companies fight, the flavoring companies fight, to get those labelings because it's that important to us, the consumer.
Well, we can't... Okay, so I'm gonna jump on. I'm gonna get on my high horse here for a moment. I'm gonna get on the highest soapbox I can. Well, you know, you're not allowed to grow a non-GMO sugar beet in this country. So, you know, that's about 80% of sugar production now comes from beets, sugar beets, and not from cane, because it's less expensive and the processing is much easier and the sugar yield is better. But the only ones that commercial growers are allowed to grow are GMO. Unless you're certified organic or artisan, what do they call it, heirloom or whatever. But and nobody wants to do that because there's no yield and there's no money in it. So if you buy a 5-pound bag of sugar on the shelf, 90% chance, unless it's cane sugar, that 95% chance that came from GMO beets. And they don't have to list that anywhere.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, there's so much going on right now with GMO labeling and... you know, and Roundup, what's it called, glucosate, and the herbicide. You know, so, you know, I really feel that during these food trends, what people have to not really get too consumed with is the idea that to obtain health, you have to eat non-GMO or organic. The real truth to it all is that we live in a very overly processed country. The United States leads in processed food, and in order to make processed food, that is the sugar industry, and our consumer foods contain 30% more of it. There is a black market for it in the U.S. We pay 30% more for it than any other nation, and I find it interesting, Patrick, that, you know, you take these food ingredients. Look, and I'm not going to say that I'm not guilty of it. I worked for the global giant. I am part of the problem, and I have consumer products on grocery store shelves, but the whole purpose is to rebalance those scales because the sugar industry and processed food industry is the biggest problem right now.
Yeah, so, you know, Americans get 60% of their calories, and I think it's actually more like 75%, from highly refined, highly processed foods, yeah. which have very low nutritional value. When you think about that, 60 to 75% of all your calories yeah. on average across the country, and then we wonder why there's obesity. But I think that translates to our industry as well. You know, we can make a big difference. Look, we most, not all, but most people that are advocates for cannabis or partake on a regular basis care about what they put in their bodies, right? We shop mm-hmm. at Whole Foods or Sprouts.
They like the world and they like mm-hmm. nature. And, you know, I think cannabis falls into the same segment of plant botanicals and living foods, you know. And when I think about food now, where I've changed from my old way of thinking, you know, I started out as a pastry chef at the Four Seasons Hotel, you know, so I knew pastries up and down and every way you know it.
Yay Four Seasons,
yes,
by the way.
Love Four Seasons, uh-huh. great hotel. But, you know, whenever you start in that industry and you go through these food trends and you come on the other side of it, where now I am, you know, gluten-free, dairy-free, I eat very little meat, you know, all grass-fed, da-da-da-da-da, you know, I'm one of those people. When you come
Ooh,
on
the do you have a favorite steak, by the way?
I don't eat steak, you know, okay. And that's just a personal choice. I eat ground meat, you know, but I...
Well, so tall grass beef, do you know who that is?
I don't. There's a Juju mm-hmm. Farms here locally
oh,
in Texas,
yes.
so
mm-hmm.
I do a lot of local, so I go to my local farmer's market, and I do just grass-fed, because the reality of it is that I'm a research chef. I mm-hmm. go into the rabbit hole many times, and I know that commodity market meats are not good for you, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's a lot of research out there showing that.
Absolutely.
So I won't go into that, but grass-fed meats, you know, those are obtaining mm-hmm. the nutrients and the minerals from the ground, from living foods, and so, you know, as you think about cannabis and botanicals and plant medicine, you know, those all are living foods. They come from our earth, you know, and that's where I think that all of these industries, when you're talking about health and wellness and, you know, reinvention and rejuvenation and rebirth and healing and, you know, all of that supports each other within it, you know. So as I'm struggling here as a chef to get the food trends to catch up so you can heal people, also cannabis is another piece to that. It's not just all cannabis is healing. It's
oh,
that,
no.
Yeah, it's just that plants and living foods, you know, that come from the earth, that bear their own seed, you know, those are healing.
Absolutely. Well, you look at most you know, commercial medicinal developments have come from plant-based products, right?
Absolutely.
Like statins came from red rice, things like that. So
it all comes from gut health. I mean, what it really comes down to, processed food that you find in your grocery store has no microbe in there, so no gut enzymes mm-hmm. in there. And it's because they've all been pasteurized or put through some type of radiation treatment or whatever to kill the bacteria, so it doesn't go rancid or it doesn't spoil. And so if that wasn't the case, then you would see orange juice that was bloated up or mm-hmm. juices that were mm-hmm. bloated up, because those are natural fermentation.
Yep, the enzymatic process.
And the good, yeah, mm-hmm. the good stuff that you want, you know. So, you know, anyways. That's
well, and it would only be good on the shelf for like 48 hours
exactly.
instead of, you know, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it's fascinating that you brought up the whole the flora and
yeah.
microbe. And I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. they run a place here in Dallas. It's called, I'll think of it in a minute. But they do this whole body optimization, human body optimization, and they've noticed with their patients, they're kind of an adjunct healer for or practitioner for chiropractors and internists and things like that. But he's noticed that as they heal the gut, right, that really actually has an effect on depression.
Absolutely.
And mood. And they're realizing now that's like one of the biggest things with depression is because we all have poor gut health.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't know if I shared with you my recovery story.
Mm-mm.
So that was me.
We did have a brief conversation, but we never really went into that.
Yeah, so, you know, back 10 years ago is when my health was really at its lowest. I was about 50, 60 pounds heavier, very sick, a lot of gut issues. You know, if I had to say what it was probably, you know, beginning Crohn's or fibromyalgia. But a lot of chronic pain, anxiety, depression, you name it, I was dealing with it. And I didn't know what to do. So that's when I started changing my diet and really researching and trying to dig into why I felt the way I did. And that's part of why I've given up as much as I have. And I've gotten better. I've lost the weight. I've found, you know, a new way to heal myself. And it's not through the old MD-directed ways that we've been taught and that our parents and grandparents have been taught. It's through natural healing, you know, and mm-hmm. through things that you can do just by small, you know, small things. Cannabis for me has been, you know, a great ally and friend, she's been with me a long time. But I also know that the challenge that we have as entrepreneurs now in this space is to be able to give the medicine in an honest way and in a clean way, and in a way that isn't just to satisfy the current market. There's a huge amount of people out there in the demographic of the patient load that are dealing with these illnesses. It's very yep. disheartening, and I think that I feel blessed and fortunate that that's my calling, you know, that that's what I've been challenged with is like, no, not only do you have to go against everything you know as a chef, as a pastry chef, and eating the old meats and the old ways, you have to reinvent yourself. You have to start over cooking and learn new things, you know, and that's great as a chef because you want to learn new things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's also your old self is saying, no, I don't want to give up that. I don't want to give up pork. I don't want to give up beef.
Changes. The subconscious mind, the unconscious mind, really doesn't like change very much.
Well, and some people just have to be on one side to help the momentum. And so what I've realized is that a lot of it for myself as I'm moving, forward in my career is it's not just about health. Yes, it is about health, but it's about balance, and it's about balance also for animal rights. So there's many complexities here that contribute to the food trends and to where things are going. I feel, I'm just excited to kind of be here on top of it. I feel that I'm in front of, I'm there with the trends. I'm cannabis and the food trends, and, I'm ready.
So how does that translate into cannabis cooking at home for the user at home? I mean, what can they do to transition to not only incorporating cannabis into their homemade edibles, and when we say edibles, we're talking about actual just edible food plates.
Yeah, edible food plates.
Then how do they transition? What are some of the easy things that they can do to facilitate that?
Yeah, so I would say there's three basic forms that I would say are easiest inside of your home. The can of butter, which most people are familiar with, mm-hmm. goes easily into any type of bakery item. Anything that calls for butter is very easily put in there.
But with that, you could change to grass-fed butters as
absolutely.
Well if you want to go a step further.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to take the milk solids out, you could clarify that. But, you can take it. You can take it deep. But, the other way, MCT coconut oil is a great extraction oil. You can use that as a top, topically on top of your salad, on top of a salad, on top of oatmeal, on top of anything, any type of food you're eating, it can go right into it. And the other extraction would be vegetable glycerin. And that one is really sweet, but it can be put into a drink very easily, any type of liquid very easily. So the application is your imagination.
I wonder if grapeseed oil would be a good conduit, because the thing I like about grapeseed oil is it stays, it doesn't congeal in the refrigerator. I'll have to look at the properties and see what the omega-3 fatty acids are.
Yeah, if it's strong enough to do the full extraction. Now, I do know that, for all three of those oils, there's different methods. And for each method, there's a variety of methods that people use. Mm-hmm. Some people do it in a crock pot. Some people, there's...
Yeah, that's kind of the standard.
The standard. I do it a little bit differently, but, that's just my process. But there's other ways to do it. You can do it over heat in a water bath, really low temperatures. Again, low and slow.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use a heat plate that you can get from...
Very consistent temperature
Consistent. Go to Walmart, and grab you a heat plate, and...
So would that be for the water bath then?
That would be for the water bath. Okay. You would get that heat plate and turn it on. Get a temperature gun. I like to get just a little laser temperature gun so I can keep my temperature monitored.
Yeah, it's a good $30 or $50 investment.
Yeah, or you can go to Bed Bath & Beyond and get you one of those oven temperature probes that comes with a little probe and a line, and you can just run it into your little water bath and hold your temperature at a certain temperature. I like to stay under 100 personally. Some mm-hmm. people go up to 130, but
I just need enough to make it liquid.
Yeah, if you're doing MCT and glycerin, they both kind of handle the same process. You actually need to process the plant material a few times, so you let it process for 8 to 12 hours, sometimes overnight. You strain it through and then you strain it through cheesecloth, and then you reprocess that plant material with a new batch of glycerin or MCT oil, and you do that, you know, two or three times should be adequate, and then you combine all the oils together and stir it up, and then you have that, you know, a finished cannabis oil. But of course, that's all decarboxylized, going back to our original.
Yeah, exactly.
Know.
And that's the biggest thing, is making sure you decarb first.
Yeah.
And there are actually some good units out there that decarb for you.
Yeah.
Now, I'll be honest, I'm not super familiar with for them. As a chef, I kind of like old school hard.
I'm old school.
I like take the most, think of the most difficult route you can take, and then add a couple steps to that.
Hey, we're still needed. We're human, and you need us.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that the classic French training, that is the mother of foods for me, and when it comes to flavor, texture, aside from that, it's the simplicity of some of the foods like pommes frites. You know, I know you don't eat steak anymore, but just a nice classic strip steak with French fries
butter. That's where my training began, is those French techniques. Yeah, it's beautiful. And, you know, just for myself, I love steaks. Don't get me wrong. But a part of it, too, is just the researching of knowing that, you know, there are diseases carried in the bloodline. And so, you know, and we're dealing with a lot of gastrointestinal stuff right now. So until we heal our guts, that blood's not safe for the stomach area, you know.
So canna butter, which is one of the most popular applications now, can have a little bit of a flavor to it that people are like, a little off-putting.
Yeah.
So, let's kind of brainstorm. What are some ways that people can flavor that butter to make it more applicable? So, I would think if you're going to use it as a spread on toast or something like that,
cocoa.
Cocoa powder, just raw cocoa powder.
Yeah. Well, you could get, you know, if you're doing your extraction and butter, you can mix that with just some sifted cocoa powder and use. I like to use sweeteners like stevia. It's a plant-based sweetener. Comes from a plant, a leaf. Mm-hmm. And then mix that, you know, a little bit of stevia in there to sweeten it and spread it on. That's like gourmet Nutella.
Well, I think you could also add some, like if you just pureed some raspberries and put them through, you know, ran them through the same strainer. So you'd have the pulp, but not the seeds.
Yeah.
That would be, that's one of my favorite, you know, chocolate and raspberries,
chocolate
kind of a classic
raspberry
for me. So if you want to make it more savory, you might add, say, chopped thyme and garlic and maybe some lemon juice or lemon zest.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had it before inside of a mole, which is really nice.
Ooh.
Yeah, because mole is not heated too hot, but it also, the way that they got
kind
it in
breaks,
there was
yeah.
in the, with the chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a can of chocolate, and then you fold that into your mole sauce, you know, and it's spicy and earthy and, you know, sweet and, you know.
That would be awesome over some enchiladas.
It's beautiful. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Some vegetable enchiladas.
Yeah, vegetable enchiladas with actually, and I'm actually a huge proponent of gluten-free tortillas. I really like
very
just
nice.
Corn flour tortillas.
I love corn tortillas.
Oh, and just corn flour. No regular flour, because a lot of times they add regular flour into as kind of a filler binder.
Sounds
delicious.
It's a lot of starch.
It is.
In the product development world, we call those multifunctional ingredients.
Mm-hmm. So modified food starches.
Yeah, if you want to go down that rabbit hole, you just Google that.
No, that's the stuff I do late at night after I have had a couple of edibles or a big dinner and I'm ready to go to bed. But so that's a couple of ideas. What else? What other applications are there? You know, I know you can take the if you happen to infuse it with coconut oil, or do the extraction process and that. Then salad dressings are a great way to...
Yeah, I would say anything that you can apply to it post-cook. I'm still just an advocate for not applying heat to the product again, and that's really where some of my edibles I'm challenging myself with the time and temperature baking, because you want to preserve as much as possible.
So what kind of stuff are you coming up with? Can you talk in general or
in
pick
general,
one that you
well,
can
yeah,
talk
because
about
there's no,
that's not too secret?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I don't, you know... hold stuff back, but yeah, it's
I'll sign the non-disclosure right now.
Exactly. You know, I would say that without letting out too much, I would say that anything crispy and crunchy would be safe for new emerging products. You know, thinking of things that are, you know, temperature sturdy, you know, so, you know, crispy snacks, that's what it really comes down to. That's what I'm working on. So what I do is
nothing like a munchie to give you the munchies.
Exactly. Well, you know, I mean, I like to think of it like, I just don't want to eat sugary sweets every time I need to medicate, right?
Because, absolutely.
You know, so, you know, I need it to be something that I'm not going to feel guilty about and something that, well, sugar feeds candida cells. So,
yes.
You know.
Again, we talked about the whole gut health thing.
Gut health, yeah.
Candida overgrowth is a huge issue.
It's a huge issue. That's the biggest issue that we're facing.
Especially in this country. Yeah. Huge.
Huge issue. So, you know, using, you know, alternative sweeteners like stevia and natural sugars, you know, are where my development's going. And so, yeah, I work on a lot of crispy snacks that will hold up. And especially here in Texas, goodness, we got to, what, 106 last week?
Yes.
And so that would probably
here, yeah,
be about 120, 130 on a warehouse dock. So, you know, that's what is also being challenged for us here in Texas, is that product development is going to be so different than what you see up, you know, up in northern states, because mm-hmm. we're just too hot here.
You know, one market I haven't looked at, which is kind of similar in climate, is Arizona. I know it's a medical-only market, mm-hmm. but I haven't spent any time looking. Obviously, I don't have my card there, so I can't just walk into a dispensary. But are there any companies out there, I mean, that you know that are getting it right, that are starting to transition?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a company, I believe it's out of Washington, it's called Zoots, and they're also old PepsiCo execs.
Mm-hmm. Are they?
Yeah, they are, you know.
Well, props to the guys that come from the big industry.
That's right.
To go into doing a field where, and look, not that Pepsi, I have nothing against big industry, I don't. They're doing what they do. They make money for their shareholders.
They didn't start from there, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
But it's good to see that some people that have taken that success and everything that they did for those companies and turning it into something a little more meaningful, at least from our point of view.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It needs to be standardized and it needs to be consistent. And so I think that's what, you know, big food companies bring into it, you know. So Zoots, you know, they've just been able to build their facility, you know, at food manufacturing levels, you know, and at the OSHA standards from the get-go, you know. So whenever you start out your company from the beginning, that meets all of those regulations.
OSHA, what's OSHA?
Exactly. But, you know, if you build that from the beginning, then you're not chasing your tail, because as a business owner, you're busy trying to fill orders. You're not mm-hmm. trying to think of all these regulations you got to fill, and then you're trying to learn it, you know, so.
And people don't realize, if you want to get it, so, you know, this is one of the heaviest regulated industries. Now, your application is now how many pages with SOPs, standard operating procedures, et cetera?
I've hit about 3,000 pages.
Only 3,000 pages?
Only 3,000.
No, that's light reading. but that comes to another point that we spoke about. There seems to be a really disproportionate, in a positive way, number of women in lead roles in this industry. And you brought up a really, really something I hadn't thought about. As to why that seems to be the case. And your point was?
I mean, I really feel that it's because a lot of the women have been inside of offices pecking away at PowerPoints for a long time, honestly, for its senior management, you know. So I think that women have a great attention to detail. They can spend a great amount of time sitting in front of a computer with focus on PowerPoints and SOPs and process. And so I think that that's what they bring to the table. And
they bring a sense of
organization
and clarity, right, and mm-hmm. message, and also the ability. So, look, I'll be honest with you. I've always had someone do my PowerPoints for me and kind of manage my schedule for me and things like that. And you're right. I mean, I think that the administrative and organizational side of most large organizations is typically dominated by women.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And at Dickie's Barbecue, when I was there, it made up probably 85% of the office staff there. And that was my first experience in a corporate environment to see that. But knowing now that the cannabis industry sits at such a high percentage level, like, I just feel like, yeah, of course I got this. You know, as soon as Texas gets it together and they open up that license application process, then, yeah, I got this. Because
well, you're already way ahead of the game.
Yeah, I am ahead of the game, and I'm hoping that the game allows me in. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you another question. We won't get there about how some companies from out of state got the first licenses here, but, you know, we won't go there.
You know, I mean, I probably have a different opinion than most. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel that somebody had to get it, and the reality of it is
they had a proven track record as
they
well.
They had a proven track record, and I wasn't quite ready, and I'm still not quite ready. I'm actually positive that the state's possibly going to give us more time and allow us to send in addendums to those applications, because I need more time to write more SOPs. That 3,000 pages isn't enough. And, you know, and when I really think about it, this isn't for the DPS. This is for me and for my company, for Bocana, you know, because it's important that the company survives, because once they open the floodgates, you know, the floodgates are open. So my product development better be solid and my SOPs better be solid.
So Bocana, tell us a little bit about Bocana and what the mission behind Bocana is.
Yeah, so Bocana, we hope to retain the cannabis use program license here. The teacup is what it's known as mainly. And that would be to grow, process, and dispense cannabis oil here in Texas. Texas chose three licensees. Two of those companies have acted on it and are producing cannabis oil. I believe there is probably under 200 patients right now that are in the program. But
well, it's a very limited program.
Very
as well.
Limited
yeah,
program.
It's
yeah.
a very specific type of very epilepsy and one other.
Yeah, and there's two doctors and there's approved. So many codings for epilepsy. This is just, you know, one of hundreds. So
yeah, exactly.
So, but, you know, I'm still very optimistic. I love Texas. I'm a Texas girl, old country girl. So I'm going to stick it out here because I don't want to leave. And I do believe in cannabis. I believe in Texas. And I believe that, you know, they're going to do the right thing in time. And until then, I'm just getting ready.
So do you think that the medicinal, even just the medicinal side will change as far as right now? I think it's you have to have 10 parts, 10 milligram CBD to 1 milligram THC on the makeup of the.
I just don't think that we're going to see much change in that type of regulation.
Not yet.
Yeah, until the nation catches up. I mean, I kind of view it as the whole country right now is going at their own rate, and states are either going to hold back and wait to see what happens, or they're going to jump into it. So,
We're kind of a hold back state as far as that goes.
Yeah, I especially with what you're seeing going on with CBD right now, I just think that they're going to play it safe. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm playing it safe, right? I'm taking the time to write out all of these business plans and to think of it smartly, work with architects and contractors on everything, to think out every single possibility. And I think that the state's doing that too. And I would hope they would, because you know what? I've been working in licensed, you know, facilities for the past 20 years, and I've been held at a standard, you know, and every company out there needs to be held at the same, period, you know. And if we're producing plant medicine, we need to make sure that it's produced out of a safe, clean facility, period. And anything other than that needs to be regulated. And I feel sorry for those companies. I truly do. But if we want to play with the big boys, this is just what we have to do.
And if you're just joining us, this is Chef Patrick Mosier here in the Reliable Bud Kitchen with our guest, Nico Murillo, from Bocana, here in the DFW area of Texas. And we're talking about, well, cannabis, kind of in the kitchen today, but we're talking more of a little bit of business and structure that goes around that. So, what is your favorite application for cannabis extracts or some sort of application in the kitchen for you personally?
I would say for me personally, I like to eat it. You know,
you know, I don't think there could have been a better answer to that. We should get Weird Al Yankovic high and have him record Eat It in a version that's,
that would be awesome. I don't know if it could get any weirder, though.
It could get funnier, though. I mean, especially if he's high.
Yeah.
Do you think he's already high?
I am on something.
Oh, I haven't thought about that guy in years.
Yeah, so, I mean, I used to love the OG way and roll up one or, you know, hit the bong, you know. But to be honest, you know, those are just really hard on the lungs. You know, nobody can see me out there, but, you know, I'm just this little tiny thing over here, and my lungs aren't that big, so.
Well, I can see it, yes. I'm not quite a smaller guy. She's a waif-like.
5'1", barely.
Yeah, but she's a powerful 5'1", let me just tell you. She's a force to be reckoned with in the industry and outside of the industry.
That's right.
So
I like to eat it. I like to put it into a carrier oil and eat it. Sometimes I'll just, you know.
You saute your veggies in it?
No, I don't.
Because you don't like to reheat
it. I don't really like to reheat it like that. So, you know, oil is a beautiful carrier. You know, you can put it into, I like the MCT oil personally. Mm-hmm. And that's just the best way. You can just put it right in your mouth.
So
you know,
for those that don't know, MCT oil is?
Fractionated coconut oil. Mm-hmm. So that is a little bit of a processed ingredient, but I would use that in there just because it is a standard in the industry, you know. But it anything that's fractionated has been through a processing technique that, you know.
There's nothing out there that hasn't been processed to some extent.
I know.
So, yeah.
It's the challenge, isn't mm-hmm.
it?
It
is.
It's a balance.
It really is. Yeah. And then, you know, where are you going? It's not compromising, but where are you willing to take some and give some?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that whenever, I didn't leave PepsiCo. I was laid off. I think a lot of people were laid off from there because, you know, trends are changing. Mm-hmm. You know, snacking's changing. You know, so I left there. And when I left PepsiCo, I decided, like, I couldn't get back into overly processed. So I think that looking at new food trends, and that's what really pushed me. And actually, surprisingly, PepsiCo, even though they didn't know, pushed me into the cannabis space.
Really?
Yes,
how so?
Did.
You were so stressed out you had to smoke when you got home every night?
Well, absolutely. But no, it was a great job. That's where I gained my certified research chef certificate. So it is a great organization. And I worked alongside engineers and food scientists on a daily basis. So, you know, some brilliant people there. But we had done a food festival in Aspen, and
Food and Wine, or?
It was right after the Food and Wine. It was a PepsiCo sponsored.
Well, because I lived in Aspen for a long time. I was a chef up
it's
there.
Beautiful
and,
there. Yeah.
I'll tell you, it was probably my, if not my favorite place to live, my second favorite.
I love it there. Yeah, I went up to Maroon Bells and hiked out there. Beautiful. Yeah.
You can hike from like Snowmass all the way over to Crested Butte, and there are all these hot springs along the way.
Yeah,
it's like an overnight hike. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
So back to, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. So
rabbit hole.
Yeah, down the hole. So I was there for 2 weeks working a food event, cooking away in the kitchen, and Colorado had just passed rec. And so I said, hey, can I borrow the car?
for about 10 hours?
Yeah, I just need to go somewhere real quick. And so I hit up the dispensary. And that was my first experience. I was probably about, 5 years ago or so? Mm-hmm. That was my first experience with edibles. And I was like, what? Like, I know what I'm doing. I'm getting out of this job. I know what my job's going to be. So, yeah, I mean, I was definitely going to get into it to make some really bad edibles.
5 years, but 5 years ago, that was still kind of in the infancy.
Yeah,
for
it was
recreational.
It had just mm-hmm. happened. It had just happened. And, you know, so yeah, I left PepsiCo within 6 months after that. So it was just really timing. The world aligned for me. And showed me, you know, the exposure. And I had, I'd always been a cannabis, you know, advocate. So that's what I did. And then I left there, went and worked for Dickie's Barbecue for a few months. And then after that, I was like, okay, I'm done. Like, I can't work for anyone else anymore. I have to do this.
I've had some ideas. Like, what if you did, like, a frozen pizza line of where the crust is infused?
Yeah.
Because I know there's pizza sauce out there. Yeah. I know there's barbecue sauce out
there.
I've
seen some out there, you know, but you're talking about those perishable guardrails.
Again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
so then so how do you, I'm working on a product right now.
Yeah.
Everybody likes chai, right?
Yeah, I love chai.
I mean, I do as well. I like dirty chai, which is where you put a shot of espresso
end. Have you been spying on my product development?
No, so we may go. So I'm going to let some stuff out of the bag right now. I'm actually working on one that would be shelf stable.
Nice, yeah.
But
I have a great formula.
Mm-hmm.
I could help you.
Actually, you know, so this is something I would like to work with you on. So I'm not going to go into too much detail, but basically you would add your heated liquid at the end, whether or not you want to have it water or. But I've been working with a guy out of Seattle.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, this is a really fun product. And again, this is something where you work on the recipe first without the cannabis infusion.
Absolutely.
To get the flavor profile.
It's just an ingredient inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I really want to pick your brain on this off the air.
Yeah, I mean, I have the recipes developed on something similar that I'm not, you know. But yeah, absolutely. I think that's just mm-hmm. for people out there that are listening, that are developing, you know, challenge yourself to make something that's more shelf stable.
Well, so in Colorado, there was a company called Keen's Greens. I'm going to give a shout out to those guys out of Denver. And actually, they developed a product called Mile High Chai.
Okay.
Which was fantastic. Then they changed the laws in Colorado where you could no longer do modified atmosphere packaging. So you couldn't inject nitrogen or something else into a canned product because it was a canned product.
MAPS.
Yeah, MAPS. Yeah, MAPS. Yep. So you couldn't modify. So it just had to be bottled and then sealed. You couldn't do anything with that.
Which is crazy because that's a standard in the processed food industry.
Yes, exactly. So then they were unable to make that anymore. I actually wanted to buy that company at one point. I wanted to buy their grow and their recipes, but it turned out that was the one recipe they were going to exclude, which was the only thing I was interested in. But props to them because they're trying to go back into manufacturing.
Yeah.
But that's where I got the idea from. And so then I had to figure out, okay, so how do you get away from that refrigerated product?
Absolutely.
Now that only has a very short shelf life because you can't use some sort of MAP process.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I got the idea from.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think you're going in the right direction, and you understand.
Well, if you're on the same track, then I'm sure I'm going in the right direction. Yeah. So, but again, for me, this is just this is not my main business, right? This is just a hobby for me. I'm a huge advocate for the industry. I'm a huge proponent of hemp, CBD, CBG. You know, when they figure out how to take so it's THC when it obviously oxidizes and actually turns into CBG, which is a very small percentage of any of the plant typically. But when they learn how to breed, which they're getting into now, they're coming up with these hybrid plants that are high in CBG and CBD. I mean, this is a game changer for cancer patients all around the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is one of the most powerful products, natural substances in the world in the fight against cancer and other illnesses. And I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I think that's probably why we're having so much pushback. You know, there's other big industries out there that know that, you know, and that have been aware.
Get on my high horse one more time. You know, the feds say that there's no medicinal properties to CBDs, cannabinoids, and cannabidiol in particular, but they actually issued patent rights, two research patents for people for chemically derived CBDs or a proximity some sort of facsimile thereof.
Well, and GW Pharmaceuticals just their studies just passed, so you know, I don't want to say too much on what. I mean, I know about them, but I don't read too much into it to know exact verbiage. But I know that it's moving through. The FDA has approved it. You know, so we're getting there. And I think that what's exciting for all of us right now is that we're on all this path together in different areas and different sectors. We're all fighting the fight together.
Yep, and whether you love them or hate them, we got to give props to Medical Marijuana Inc., who kind of started this stuff all about 9 or 10 years ago with their cannabis research, and they were the first publicly traded medical marijuana company. But they bought a couple other companies just for their patented rights for these THC containing medically applicable products, which I think are gonna be game changers soon. That aside, we got a few minutes left. Again, we're here with Nico Morello of Bocana.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're sitting here in an undisclosed location in DFW region. We're actually near Fort Worth. Yeah. I promise we have nothing here with THC in it. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. Let me hide this.
I mean, going back to, you know, how I like to take it, I would say just any way you can eat it. You know, you're getting the full amount of cannabinoids, total cannabinoids. You're not blowing them off through heat, you know, and you're not destroying them or taking in plant material that you don't need. So, and for medical patients, a lot of it's being eaten, you know, and a lot of these.
So juicing non-decarb product, I know, because you can get such a huge dose of THCA.
Yeah, all the A's.
Without having any sort of, residual high effect, basically, for the most part. So my sister just had colon cancer. She was just, fortunately, it was a quick diagnosis, a very simple surgery. Seems to be like a full remission, no residual, cells, anything like that. And did not go through the lymphatic system. And so that's something we spoke about, getting her medical card and juicing so that she can get this super high dose of THCA because she doesn't want to feel the high effect.
Yeah. I would also encourage her to look at places like the Living Foods Institute, you know, that really looks at plant health, and they do a lot of alternative stuff, you know. So
And Living Foods Institute, can they find them online?
Yeah, you can find them online. And it's, you know, they do a lot of alternative stuff, and they'll send people away to other states that don't support, you know, that support more natural medicine and not MD-directed. But, I've read some great articles on juicing cannabis. I haven't done that just because we don't have fresh cannabis here, but I would definitely want to try it. What I think it would taste like is just very earthy and grassy.
It is. You have to mix it with some other stuff. Yeah. It's a little stronger than wheatgrass. If you're used to having wheatgrass, it's not quite like that.
I know. I mean, I guess I find it real challenging edibles sometimes, and other people's edibles, because of that old pastry chef background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, oh, this flavor shouldn't be in here. So, you know, as you're developing, also remember that like things like chocolate really cover up that smell, but they also have their own natural cannabinoids in it. So
they do.
It complements the chocolate as well as lavender.
Well, I know that there are some great edibles in Colorado. There was one I think they stopped manufacturing. It was like a 10-pack of these little granola bites that were unbelievable.
I think I've had those. I forget the name of them now.
There were individual
little
pockets.
Like
it kind of folded open.
Yes.
They may still make them, but I couldn't find them last time I was there. I'll look up the name and I'll tweet that out.
The last time I had them was about 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. I had went to Colorado, and this is also for developers, just so you're out there and you're listening. You know, one thing about that packaging company that I noticed is that their alignment, it was a pill back. So you open it up like a book. It was a pill back, and the granolas were supposed to pop out.
But they didn't pop out very
they
well.
They didn't pop out.
No, you had to kind of cut it open.
You had to cut it open. The alignment wasn't done right. So, you know.
Which I think for child safety is probably...
Well, I mean, but this was a mistake on the line. So this was a manufacturing mistake. So it's just important as you're looking at packaging and stuff to, you know, make sure you're doing a test run prior to running big batches, because you're going to be paying for, you know, a run of 10,000 when you have a mistake like that. So.
Oh, and by the way, it's livingfoodsinstitute.com. That's for the Living Foods Institute.
Yes.
And
they're great.
Yeah, they do some incredible
stuff.
They
do some incredible stuff and have some great success stories with cancer. So, yeah, I'm just glad to be out of PepsiCo and making the processed foods and now being on this side of it, of the healing and living foods and doing what I'm doing. So really, really just happy and blessed to be here.
So we got about 3 minutes left in the show. I want to give a shout out to my friend Will Bosch. William is, he owns Topstone. So Topstone, they do these amazing vaporizers. They're really classy. They look like a piece of art. They're solid wood, and they custom engineered the heat element inside. He's going to have a dinner coming up. Actually, I believe it's a Topstone cannabis dinner with Purple Haze. I believe they have DJ Josh Craig involved. It's coming up. I'll look for the date here, but they're going to use the Humboldt County's Nasha extracts, which are Purple Haze wonderful products, and they're going to do it with Chef Michael Magalanes. I don't know if you know who he is, and sorry, Michael, if I butchered your name, but he is an amazing chef out of the San Francisco region who was two Michelin starred restaurants, and he transitioned to be a cannabis chef. And I'm telling you, he's doing things that people have not seen in this industry. So if you want to look for trendsetters, check it out. I'll tweet out a link also to that dinner. And if you want to check out, there's a great podcast with Will on the radio. It was probably on the 420 Wake and Bake show with Andrew from Purple Haze. But again, I'll send that link out. And, you know, glad that you made it on the show, Will. Congrats. And he's got an amazing product. It's Topstone. I think it's topstoneprojects.com. Topstoneprojects.com. Any last minute shout outs you want to give? Any props to anybody?
No, I would just say if y'all are needing some product development, look me up. You know.
And how do they find you?
They can find me through the Bocana website, www.bocana.com.
That's BOCANA.
Absolutely. That's a blend of botanical and cannabis. So they can also find me on LinkedIn. Nico Murillo, that's N-I-C-O, N as in Nancy, I-C-O, last name's Murillo, M-U-R-I-L-L-O. That's the best place to find me. I'm on Facebook.
Not
Murillo?
Not Murillo?
No, that's Mexican.
It's Italian.
It's Italian.
Well,
you know.
I'm American, but
I'm a little bit of everything.
We're in Texas. Everybody wants to pronounce it like it's Spanish.
I'm just a mutt, and that's the best.
That's okay. I'm Patrick Mosher. You're better known as Patrick Mosher. Mr. Mosher,
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much. So, again, this is Chef Patrick. We're here in the Reliable Bud Kitchen with our wonderful guest, Nico Murillo. Just joking. But, all right, catch us next week, same time, same channel. Ciao for now. Talk to you soon.